Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Spurs in full cry here.
Welcome, listeners, to The Extra Inch. My name is Windy, and I'm joined by my psychic and best friend, Bardi. Hello, Bardi.
Hello, Windy.
And our tactics guy and my perennially injured midfielder, Nathan A. Clark. Hello, Nathan.
Some say the Moussa Dembele of his generation.
Yeah, Nath, what's happened now?
a chain of injuries connecting to each other like that awful bone description song.
Bless you. Bless you. Keep fighting, mate. You'll be back on that treadmill soon. we're going to have a bit of a catch-up episode. We've not podcasted as a threesome for a while. And although there's been no football to speak of, it's kind of a good time to have a catch up on where we are with Jose Mourinho. So let's start with Bardi, because I think this will be the least controversial take. Bardi, how do you feel about Jose at this point?
I had a wave of optimism, and then as we approach Christmas, I kind of, even though I put on a good like kind of show of being still kind of optimistic and positive, I wasn't. I started to doubt, and I started to listen to the points that were being raised. But now I'm kind of back in that positive frame of mind, and I think we're doing okay. I don't think we're miles away from the finished product, but I'm pretty happy with the changes that's happened and the fact that we're starting to win football matches again.
And do you feel as though, given where we were when Mourinho came in, do you think where we are now is a success for Mourinho?
Yeah, I think so. If you look at the form table and everything else since Mourinho's taken over, I think we're what, third in the league in terms of points, which was, that was what it was all about. I don't think this season was going to be anything about putting together a stylistic way of playing or changing the ethos around the football. It was all about getting enough points to finish back in the top four and not dropping out of the Champions League, which I know we've spoken in the past about how it won't affect us that much, but I think it'll be a huge blow to Spurs if we're not in the Champions League next season.
I agree. I fully agree. Nathan, how about you? You were quite down on the appointment, and I don't think it was anything. Well, I'm kind of putting words in your mouth. I think it was more about the you thought there was some better appointments available at the time, rather than it being particularly about Mourinho. But how do you feel about things a few weeks in? How and do you consider what he's achieved so far a success?
I'll start with the ends there, and that yes, there's certainly like so when, you know, he signs a long-term contract, but his first goal was to like end the catastrophe that was ongoing at the time, and he's done that. He's sort of arrested our sinking ship. More long-term thinking, I don't know, I guess I'm still sort of waiting to see what happens. I was frustrated with his appointment. I do maintain that there were better things we could have done, but there are still positive signs and sort of signs of intention, which mean, you know, that could well prove to prove me wrong. No, not to prove me wrong, not to prove me wrong, but to be, you know, on the better end of that. I will always maintain that there were better options than Jose Mourinho, but it might just turn out to be not as bad as I thought it would be.
Okay, I can totally appreciate the point you're making, and I think you're coming at it from a kind of philosophical and tactical perspective in terms of a progressive manager who has new ideas that can bring us as a club into a kind of modern era of playing the right football and running the club in the right way. Do you think there's an element that Levy felt he needed a character who was not only a kind of a proven winner as such, someone that the players could easily recognise and respect and wouldn't have to Google in Danny Rose parlance, who was also incredibly ruthless. And the reason I say that is there was so much work to do in the squad. And to me, he's kind of got off to a flyer in that respect in terms of what he's ticked off on the to-do list in a really short space of time.
Yeah.
Do you think there's an argument, Bardi, to say that that was one of the main reasons that he was brought in, knowing that Mourinho doesn't stick around the clubs for that long?
Yeah, I think so. It's like Pochettino was given a fixer-upper at this house to build it and make something great. And he had some tools and it was going well for a while. But then I think towards the end, he just spent too long in IKEA and there was too much clutter. There was too many flat packs knocking around and he needed somebody to come in and just clear it away. And perhaps this is what we're seeing now. Perhaps this will be Spurs reverting to a 2-3 year cycle on managers. Perhaps like a Conte would come in next or something like that, where we will, maybe the person, the big project manager, is not going to be our way from now on. I don't think that's right, and I would like us to see maybe after Mourinho's done his kind of wood chopping and maybe won us something, then someone come in with a plan. But yeah, I think there was a definite need for someone to come in with a fresh approach and a personality and the strength of character to actually swing the axe.
And this isn't an unusual trait of Daniel Levy's. He's done this quite consistently where he's gone from one type of manager to the polar opposite and back again and back again. So it doesn't feel particularly unusual that he's not picked a sort of similar, a manager of a similar style to Pochettino. Nathan, does that make you feel any better about the situation if you sort of think of it in those terms?
I always found that pattern quite odd, and I found it even odder still when you sort of prove the value that Pochettino brought and the way that football has continued to change in sort of his direction over the previous year. So it's odd. I want to sort of revisit the overall point. My good friend Tiago says that the only time you can evaluate a transfer is at the time that it happens, which I think is a pretty extremist view, but I get the point that he's making, which is like, You can only assess a decision based on the information that was available. So sometimes you overpay for an old player and then it happens that they overperform beyond any kind of expectations. And sometimes you buy a promising young player and things just don't work out for them. I think it's all very much the same for managers. So if Mourinho proves his ability to reinvent himself, to modernise his game, to bring the best of what he brought from before and combine it with some modernist approaches as well, and does some really impressive things with Spurs, then, you know, absolutely fair play to him. That would be incredible. But the chances of that happening, of being able to see that happening beforehand based on his time over the last decade would be, you know, and if Levy's been certain of that, then maybe he has a special kind of sight to these things that no one else can have. But I don't see how you can confidently forecast that.
And following on from that, we had a question from Unfit for Spurpose, who talks about the bald Mourinho, the new Mourinho. He says, is this a way of Jose reinventing himself into a new philosophical, ultra-pragmatic, shit-housing, results-winning machine? And Bronx Spur says, if this is not Mourinho ball we're seeing, what do you think it'll look like next year when he gets to instil his own system? Bardi, what do you think Mourinho ball will look like next year? Do you feel like some of the things he's already implemented will be a short-term fix only? Or do you think he has a particular style in mind?
Yeah, I'd just like to... Or bald Mourinho, it's not it's not the first time we've seen buzz cut Mourinho. I think back at Chelsea, yeah, he went bald, and they went on a winning streak. Maybe cutting his hair does something to form. But yeah... Oh, I got obsessed with Mourinho's hair and I lost my way for a second. I'll hand it over.
That's how it works.
I was just picturing his hair. Yes, that's exactly how it happens. So you forget everything. I think what we're seeing from Mourinho now, this is in the future. I think this whole kind of left back that cuts inside and becomes a back three, I think that's probably in part down to a lack of a defensive midfielder and maybe a lack of faith in our centre back. So I don't think we're anywhere near Mourinho's final result.
Fair enough. We had a really interesting email from Conrad Dernvik. Sorry if I've butchered your name, Conrad. But it was around the comparison with Lille and the fact that Mourinho had been visiting Lille and the idea that they did something similar to us, i.e. they had Bielsa and his approach, and then they went to appoint someone with a very different style, who I believe is Gaultier. And he asked us to kind of look into this and talk about whether there was a comparison between us and Lille. Nathan, you've done some research. It doesn't feel like it's probably a little tenuous, would you say?
Yeah, I thought it was a really interesting question, you know, to the extent where I thought it was worth looking into and going and watching some Lille games, but I don't think there's really anything there. They play a pretty unique and interesting, so they're doing sort of a low or even mid-low block occasionally kind of thing, and then their possession game is they control the ball from the back a lot and then they attack down the wings. It's interesting, but I'm not really seeing any sort of similarity to what Mourinho. I don't think I'm seeing anything similar to what Mourinho is doing, other than we share sort of some stuff and the like.
Sure. We've got a whole bunch of questions and I'm just going to rattle through them because our listeners really came up with the goods on Twitter. These are they're like a whole range of topics and I haven't really grouped them particularly, but let's just go for it. So Richard Joyce says, of the rumoured failed striker targets, Piontek, Giroud and Willian Jose, would any have been better than signing nobody, or are we better off having left short-term and low-quality options in favour of using our wide forwards, false nines and maybe blooding power at night now he's signed on? Bardi, what do you think? Are you glad we signed no one, basically?
No, well, this is a huge gamble for Spurs to have taken. They opted to sign no one because there was no one that they wanted that would fit them long term or perhaps even short term. It's a huge gamble, and I don't know, we have to wait and see on this one, because trusting Lucas and Son and then allowing Parrott to get some minutes, it's a huge ask. And I'm an eternal optimist with Spurs, I always am. Part of me thinks we'll be fine, but then my heart says we'll probably come to regret this come May.
But the decision was driven by the lack of available suitable striker in the market, right? Mm-hmm. And I do feel as though the point Richard's making there, or I'm not even sure if he's making a point, but one of the options he's outlined there, that signing no one and using our false nines and giving Parrott an opportunity, that's my preferred route given the circumstances, I think. I mean, I've nothing against Piontek. I knew nothing really about him before we were linked him, and I just kind of binged on Piontek videos and watched a couple of games. I think he's a functional striker who could have done a reasonable job, but for the money they were asking and for the fact that he would have stood in Parrott's way, I don't know, I'm not convinced that would have been the right move. Nathan, how do you feel about this situation we've got into?
It's really hard to sort of do the comparison of signing, you know, making a, let's say, generally a low quality signing versus not making a signing at all, because we don't know how bad the lack of sort of a recognised forward is going to be for us. It's certainly not been very nice so far. You know, if it means that we fail to score more than 5 goals for the rest of the season, then yes, we should have signed even Piontek, who I do think is quite bad. So it's hard to pick sort of one or the other. I do think that the players we were linked with were pretty poor quality, and I do think that if we bring through Parrots, then that will have been the best decision. But it's a matter of our ability to actually do that. It's like, should we sell, you know, Harry Kane when he was at his most valuable, Christian Eriksen when he was the most valuable, Dele when he's the most valuable? Sure, absolutely, if we believe we have the ability to replace them, which has been, you know, mix and match over the last 15 years or whatever. So there is a window of opportunity here to bring through a talented young player, but we may just not do that either. The worst of both worlds.
And I think the biggest element of that is honestly, if it means we play Lucas in central striking position for the rest of the season, then I have a problem with the outcome, to be honest. I would rather have signed someone or played Parrott than end up with Lucas playing there. And that leads on to a question from Bryce Cathcart, who says, what role do you see Lucas playing as we begin to get players back from injury? Do you think he remains a starter? I'll start with you, Bardi. What do you think? I mean, obviously, we hope that Lucas moves back to the right wing where he's at his best. Do you think he's a starter there when everyone's fit?
Yeah, I think he remains as a starter and as a option, and we'll see Son and Lucas interchange more. I think we'll definitely start with those two and mix and match during the game. And if it doesn't work out, then perhaps we'll see a Parrott or Lamella move into that role. He seems very... I don't think we'll see Dele play as a false nine, and I don't think we'll see Lamella play as a false nine. Mourinho just doesn't seem to fancy those two there.
And Nathan, what do you think Lucas's long-term chances are at Spurs? Do you buy the fact that Mourinho was a genuine big fan, and let's imagine that what he's seen so far hasn't convinced him that Lucas is the player he thought he was, but what do you think? Do you think Mourinho sticks with him?
I don't know about sticking to them. I think that whether I do believe that Mourinho was excited about him, because I think he sees what a lot of people see, this incredible raw talent, this ability for a player who can play a variety of attacking positions, whose ability to control the ball is outrageous, to turn in space is outrageous, who has a ridiculous burst of pace, who has technical skills, and you think, wow, if I can get my hands on this player and mould him and coach him and give him some direction, then what a player he'll be. And then, like the previous coaches who thought exactly the same, they tried to mold him, and he's just a raw footballer. He's a streets footballer, and he always will be. And in a modern game, yes, you can have brilliant moments from that, but a lot of the time it's going to be very limiting.
I tweeted the other day that Lucas plays like an 18-year-old and needs a lot of coaching, and I stand by that. We had another question actually from Richard Joyce, who specifically asked Nathan, when you scout players online, so not going to see them in the flesh, what's your process? Do you look at what stats say they're good at, and then look out for those features on video, or do you watch video and make your own conclusions, then see if stats back them up?
I don't have a particular order of which I go. I think I'd normally go to the stats first before I go to the video, because it's easier to look at the stats quickly and then have that done.
It's
and
quicker.
Then it's, you know, simply as that. I like to think that I don't allow one to inform the other. I like to think that I view them independently, because often, you know, I'll see, you know, oh, this player completes a high number of dribbles, and then I'll watch the tape and lo and behold, they're, you know, constantly beating people out wide. And then sometimes it'd be like, oh, this player puts up a lot of tackles, and then you go and watch the tape and it's like, okay, yeah, they're sort of bundling into the ball, but they always lose it immediately after they've won it. So you get a reassessment on the stats. So I don't have a particular order. I'm not too worried about the order. I don't think it matters. I certainly like to think that I don't allow one assessment to affect the other.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
So next question is from Up Top Life, who says, would you agree that a left centre-back is just as big a need as a defensive midfielder, more than full-backs at least? And I guess that's post-Jan Vertonghen substitution. Bardi, what are your thoughts? Do you think a left centre-back is essential?
Yeah, I think so. We've seen a lot of teams... The Premier League seems to kind of go from teams that sit deep and play counter to high-pressing. And I don't know if it's just me, but it seems to be more teams who are pressing. So it's becoming more obvious now that we struggle without a left-sided centre-back just because it makes it easier to beat a press and it kind of opens up the pitch a bit more. And also because it's safer. If you're getting pressed, you know, the worst-case scenario, if you're going towards the left, the worst case is it goes out for throw-in rather than cutting back inside towards danger. So, I think a left-sided centre-back is probably pretty high up, but not as high as perhaps a right back or a centre midfielder.
It's quite limiting though, isn't it? There aren't many top class left-footed centre backs around. And if we're kind of putting that as our priority category in the search for a centre back, then, you know, we're going to be potentially left with the dregs, which does concern me. Nathan, what do you think? Is it of huge importance to have a left foot on centre back, or would you rather just have someone who fits the system?
Well, specifically left footed, generally that's definitely the trend, but I think you can find, like, so Toby Alderweireld can definitely play on the left. The problem is that we need him on the right, yeah? So if we had two Toby Alderweirelds, we'd probably be fine. I do think that the left-sided centre-back is becoming something of a priority, but I wouldn't put it as urgent as defensive midfield. Like, yeah, you know, Vertonghen appears to be dropping off or whatever, but, like, Sanchez isn't terrible by any means. I think that, like, we've been a little spoiled with the quality of our centre-halves over the last few years because Vertonghen and Alderweireld have been incredible and, you know, they're both starting to drop off one more than the other. So, like, just because Davinson Sanchez isn't peak Toby Alderweireld doesn't mean that he isn't a decent centre-half. I've said before, you know, I would be playing one Foyt more than we currently are. It's up there, but, like, meanwhile at defensive midfield, Dyer and Wanyama are shells and Winks just, I don't think, is defensively up to that role. And our only right back is insane.
Okay, this one is about our best 11. So it's from Javad Movahedi. He says, assuming everyone is 100% fit and match fit, how do you see our strongest 11 lining up this season, including the formation? And which positions in that starting 11 need to be addressed? So we're going to assume that Kane is fine again, Bardi. What's your first choice 11? Particularly now we've got Bergwijn in, I guess.
I wouldn't veer far from 4-3-3. And obviously we'll have issues there in defensive midfield, right back, left back. But I guess it'll be a 4-3-3 with perhaps Davies or Tanganga, who's been great as that kind of left back who holds inside for this season. And then a midfield three of Winks, Lo Celso and Ndombele. And then, quite controversially, perhaps Bergwijn, Son and Kane up front. I'm a bit unsure about Dele at the moment. Where he plays on the pitch, stuff that's happening in his life off the field as well. So I've always been a huge Dele fan, but I'm unsure where he fits in a 4-3-3.
Interesting. We'll come back to that in a sec. Nathan, how about you? Are you lining up similarly to Bardi?
I think fairly similarly. I'm sort of undecided on formation, so my if you take the back line as given, I think we're all pretty much in agreement of what that looks like. And then Winks as the number six, and Ndombele, and then that could be a two-man midfield with four attackers ahead, or it could be a 4-3-3 where he's joined either by Lo Celso or Dele, and then Son and Kane make up the final two attackers. I think that could be a 4-3-3, a 4-2-3-1, sort of a blur between the two of those, even a diamond, although people get very upset when you say that. Yeah, you know, there's lots of options and variations within that.
Yeah, I think right now our best player is Lo Celso, so we have to basically build a team wherever suits him the best, wherever we're going to get the most out of him. He has to play in that role, and then everybody else works around that. Obviously, Ndombele should have been the midfielder that we build the team around, but I don't think we can yet. So I think we have to find a system that suits Lo Celso, not one that suits a player who's kind of out of form at the moment, like Dele.
You're right, and it's such a hypothetical because not only is Kane obviously long-term injured, but we've got no idea what's going to happen with Ndombele at the moment. He's so far from peak fitness and a player that we can come to rely upon. So certainly for the time being, it looks like the midfield will be Dele, Lo Celso and Winks. And then Ndombele every now and again until he gets fully fit, and then we go from there, I guess. Coming back to Dele, so Courtney Davis said, are we moving towards a 4-3-3 formation, and if so, where does that leave Dele? And then we had a similar question from Jimmy Bronze, and Benedict Fox says, should we have sold Dele already? Have we missed out on his peak value? What would that peak value have been compared to now? I don't know if you want to touch on what's happened this week with Dele, Nathan, or not. It's up to you. But how are you feeling about Dele? Do you think there's an element in in that Benedict Fox question that makes you think, yeah, we perhaps should have sold him.
On selling him, I go back to what I said earlier, which is like, yeah, absolutely, you should sell players when they're at the highest value, when there's the most excitement for them, when there's an offer of a huge sum of money, but only if you are absolutely confident in your recruitment to make the best of that, which I'm not sure that we are. So, you know, yes, but only if. And therefore, probably not. On his video, I mean, you know, I think it was pretty shitty of him, but it was not meant to go public. It was meant to just be shared among his mates. And, you know, he's still relatively young. So he's apologised. I think he sort of fluffed up his apology the first time around, but he has apologised. You know, I don't think he's a terrible human being. It's just, you know, another thing that he needs to learn from, isn't it?
Yeah, I think that's a very reasonable take. It's not nice to see a player that you kind of had begin to really like do something shitty like that. In fact, it's way worse than not nice. It's what he did was disgusting and completely out of order. And you could tell from his apology video that he was just absolutely full of regret, which so he should be. And I hope it caused him a lot of inner turmoil for those few days where he was in the news and made him reflect upon what he'd done. He is a huge public figure and role model for people. I know that's not his fault, but he is. I mean, he didn't choose to put himself in a position of being a role model, but he chooses to collaborate with brands and get involved in media campaigns that make him one. So I guess in that sense, you know, he's catapulted himself into the limelight. And I think Delhi will get a ban from the FA for it. And I think he should get a ban for it. And I hope, like I said, I hope he's had a chance to reflect and that he really genuinely meant his apology. And like you said, he's a young man. No one's perfect. We've all made mistakes and continue to make mistakes. And it's how you kind of deal with that thereafter that makes difference.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think he will get banned, but let's not forget our goalkeeper got pissed up and got behind the wheel of a car.
Absolutely.
So there's different levels on this. I understand Delhi and everything else, but Hugo's been forgiven. Delhi's done something stupid and, you know, we got to move on from it because we forgave Hugo, so Delhi's got to be forgiven.
You know,
as well.
Aurier has, you know, he's been forgiven for his homophobic slurs, and there have been other players in our past. You know, Van der Vaart is a huge fan favourite, but he beat up his wife. There's an element of fandom that stops you wanting to call out players because you love them as players on the pitch, but I think it's hypocritical to not call them out and then to have views on other public figures. So I think, you know, anyway, I'll stop rambling on because it'll bore some people, but yeah, Delhi's in a very complicated situation right now. So Nathan, we'll talk about the RB Leipzig game. You've spoken about it a little bit before, but it was Brian Schaffner said he'd like an in-depth preview of how we match up against them. And he pointed out that you sounded pretty pessimistic the last time you spoke about that match. What do you think we would need to do to beat them?
Oh, God. Okay. this might sort of sound a little bit like lazy analysis, but I think Leipzig, in fact, the Red Bull project are quite different from other football clubs. So, whereas, you know, like with us, we get rid of Pochettino and we replace him with a quite different manager, although maybe he's sort of modernizing, whatever. You get the point I'm making is that a club style is defined by their manager, but the Red Bull operation, which is sort of overseen as a two club operation by Ragnik, there's a consistency within their style at both clubs, at all age groups, and between managers. All of this is to say, Hasenhüttl at Southampton now has Southampton playing in a style that was similar to how he had them at Leipzig, which we currently still see them playing under Nagelsmann. So Nagelsmann came in and started playing his 3-4-1-2 and has fairly quickly gone back to his 4-2-2-2. Not that formations are tactics, but that's sort of a general insight as to the consistency we're seeing between managers and between clubs. So what we're seeing from Southampton, what we're seeing from the Red Bull teams is this sort of high medium block with a focus of turnovers out of possession. And then they are also playing some sort of intricate, narrow possession stuff as well. So if we look at the troubles that we have had against Liverpool, against Southampton, we see where the scariness comes from. It's their ability to punish us for trying to play through the middle, which is why I believe that we will probably see Mourinho set up fairly similarly to how we did against Liverpool, in our own sort of medium to medium low block, with our own intention of turning the ball over, probably where their fullbacks have the ball, and a quickly, you know, play Son, Bergwijn, whatever in that way.
What are their main weaknesses?
Patrick Schick, he's their main weakness.
Go on, buddy.
He's terrible. I mean, he couldn't hit a barn door at Roma, and he was just... I know what I've done now. Oh, my God. I know exactly what I've done, but to be honest with you, do you know what I think our biggest tactical thing that's happened with this Champions League is the winter break. I'm a firm believer that the winter break is a huge problem for German teams. So that's what I'm putting all my trust in, that and Patrick Schick being Patrick Schick.
So you mean that they won't be sharp enough?
Yeah, and he's just not very good at either.
Nathan, what do you think? How do we do damage against Leipzig?
Yeah, I think it's making them play the ball. Not that they are by any means poor on the ball, but not, also not being pinned back into our own third. So we need to attack them in midfield. Mm. Where, like I said before, we need to concentrate on turning them over at their fullbacks. Because they like to play back inside from their fullbacks. They like to play from fullbacks into midfield, and I think that there's some potential vulnerability there.
Well, Bergwijn showed signs of being able to do that against City.
There you go. So I definitely think I would start Bergwijn for that game, because it's going to be all about attacking in behind. They push up very high. They play at a very high pace. We will be forced to play at a high pace. So I think it will be a tactical game, but also a very physical one.
Cool. And we have a question which might make you cry from Bancy Castle, who says, if Lo Celso doesn't get injured on international duty, would Poch still be the manager? Bardi.
Yeah, this is something that I've been obsessing over for the last the last couple of weeks. And I keep suggesting doing this as a possible pod, but you keep shutting me down, Windy. You shut down my creativity all the time.
The Mourinho of the exchange.
Yeah, exactly.
Christ, it's, I am.
it's the what ifs of transfer windows, because like if you go all the way back and you look at the Redknapp era, when we had the opportunity to sign Suarez, he was available, but instead we went for Saha. If we make that transfer, then do we push on and win the league? Do you remember we were up against City, pulling it back, Balotelli stamped on Parker's head, everything else that led on from that, and then we replaced Redknapp with the opposite manager, AVB, who turns up with his dossier and a very clear idea of how he wants to play football. And that idea is built around a defensive, a deep-line playmaker like Moutinho, who we don't sign. And he ends up starting the season with Livermore and Huddleston, and it's a mess. But thankfully, there was Bale. Had we had Moutinho, partnered him with Bale, we probably finished top four that year. Does Bale stay? Probably. And AVB, who's shown now at Marseille, now he's finally recovered from Tottenham, he's not too bad. So it's we don't know what would have happened to Pochettino, but I think perhaps Pochettino still would have ended up getting fired, but perhaps not in the same way. He probably would have got to the end of the season had Lo Celso not got injured. So it is very much a what if, a sliding doors kind of thing of football.
That's it. And I don't think it's anything specific to Spurs. This feels like there's always a decision, isn't there, in football? There's always, a club is always going to have a difficult decision to make at some point. And we had that difficult decision. Levy did it, pulled the trigger, he was brave. Whether Lo Celso's injury had that much of an impact, I mean, if it did, he should never have been so reliant on one player, I would say. Nathan, what are your thoughts?
It's possible. I do think, and we sort of accepted this previously, I do think that everything has very much a sell-by date, and players become tired of Pochettino and his ruthless attention to detail, like on the pitch, on training, on Tottenham property as a whole, and the sort of relationship just sort of wear down. And I maintain that there are issues outside of the fitness of Lo Celso and Ndombele, and Sessegnon as well, all three new signings. But I mean, yeah, it's quite possible that if all three players had hit the ground running, that things would have been much, much smoother.
As the Mourinho of the podcast, and not wanting to stifle Bardi's creativity, Bardi is very keen to do some sort of timeless episodes, which I think is a great idea. If you have ideas for timeless episodes, get in touch with him at BardiTFC on Twitter. Bardi, why haven't you changed your Twitter handle to BardiTEI, by the way?
I don't know. I've kind of got used to Bardi TFC.
Okay, all right. Well, that leads nicely onto the next question about summer clear-outs.
Stop trying to change me completely, Windy.
So Andy Perry says, where do you see the summer clear-out starting and what do you expect in terms of numbers of ins and outs to take place this summer? Nathan, Mourinho's already hinted that he's wanting to do a lot of business. He's already started the clear-out, really. He got rid of a few in January, brought a couple in. What do you think is the first, you know, what are the first pieces of business he does in the summer?
I mean, yeah, it's outs before ins, isn't it? And do you remember when he first arrived and said he was very happy with the squad? Anyway, I mean, Wanyama, Dyer, Rose, if you don't consider him already gone. I would be looking to move Aurier on, but not until we've, you know, brought in a new right back over the course of a season. There's a lot of players to move on, and we're having a really hard time moving them on, it seems, over the last, you know, 18 months.
So the Mac boy on Twitter says, has Sissoko realistically got a future at Spurs now? Do you think he's someone we could move on, Bardi?
I think he's quite versatile. He's reasonably useful. I don't think we'll move him on unless somebody comes in with a bid that makes sense for us, because otherwise he can kind of play as backup in a midfield three. We have seen him used out wide as well. So unless someone comes in with a ridiculous offer, I think Sissoko stays. Regarding the summer clear out, I think we'll probably lose one of Lucas or Lamella as well, as he kind of streamlines his forward line as well.
Yeah, that seems like a sensible move to keep one of those two, because, you know, in terms of what they offer the team, it's quite similar in that you don't ideally want either of them starting games. And actually, Lamella's, as much as I adore Lamella, and I really truly do, he's very unreliable in terms of his fitness. And Mourinho has got this ruthless streak, which we've been discussing already, so perhaps it's the summer that Lamella moves on. I don't know. In terms of ins, though, how many players, Nathan, do you expect him to sign?
Probably like three. So I think there are like three major priorities, and I just don't see us like, and the thing with like the bigger the priority is, the bigger portion of the budget that they take up, and therefore the less other things you can get done, right? So I wouldn't expect huge turnover, even if we manage to move on several players, because I just don't think that we do that much business in a single summer. So four absolute tops.
Yeah, I think we might see a few more kind of loan with options to buy, yeah, and then maybe two or three kind of actual outright purchases.
Cool. Okay, well, we'll leave it there. We're all caught up, and we'll be back soon to talk about actual Spurs matches.
You've been listening to The Extra Inch. Thanks to Nathan A. Clark for production. Thanks to Bardi for being Italian. Thanks to Adam Gardner for the artwork. Thanks to David Lindner for our intro music. You can find him on Twitter at DavyShambles and his SoundCloud D Lindner. Do check him out, he's great. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook at The Extra Inch. Email us via podcast@theextrainch.co.uk and subscribe via your usual podcast platforms. And if you do enjoy the podcast, consider leaving us a rating and review. That would really help.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Winning is an everyday mindset, and we're here to help. I'm Craig Robinson. Join me and Coach John Calipari for Ways to Win. We're kicking off during March Madness. Cal's Kentucky Wildcats are in the hunt. So throughout the tournament, I'm going to call up my friend to ask about his wins, losses, and especially what he's telling his players in the locker room.
You got to win every day.
Find the Ways to Win podcast anywhere you listen.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.